Thinking Liberty, Episode 20.
Welcome to Thinking Liberty, the podcast that explores lifestyles of freedom-minded individuals. Join us as we discuss work, hobbies, health, learning, and more while living a travel-orientated lifestyle. Be curious, be open, be inspired, be free. And now, here are your hosts, Zach and Sarah Varnell.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Thinking Liberty. We're coming to you from our mobile studio, currently parked in Bass Harbor, Maine. So, as always, I'm Zach.
And I'm Sarah. And yeah, we just arrived in Bass Harbor yesterday. We left our little campground in Old Orchard Beach, just outside of Portland, Maine. And it was a pretty short drive. But we're definitely loving it here so far. I'm ready to move. I'm like looking at all these homes for sale. I'm like, is that one on the coast? Does that one have a view of the water? Let's buy that one.
I feel like you've been saying that for a lot of episodes, though. You're ready to move to at least three or four different places.
Well, I guess we'll just have to be one of those people. But
I mean, we kind of are. We move around in our RV. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. Zach's like, we are living here, Sarah. So we wrapped up our last week in Old Orchard Beach and moved here just yesterday, and we took advantage of as much as we could in Old Orchard Beach. We went into Portland, which is just out, just nearby. We went to one of the coffee shops that Lauren had mentioned on her episode, talking about wild terrains and her travel planning guides. One of the coffee shops she had mentioned was Bard Coffee. So we went there one day, and we worked from there for an afternoon, and it was really great. I really enjoyed the atmosphere. And the coffee was pretty good. So that was fun getting to check out a recommendation from one of our guests.
Yeah, and Portland itself just seemed really neat and really nice. Lots of good restaurants. I think on an episode of No Reservations, they mentioned that Portland had more restaurants per capita than even San Francisco. And I don't know if that's true, but it did seem like they had a lot for such a small city.
Yeah, and we definitely didn't get too far into that scene. We definitely only had a small sampling. One place that we checked out was something to do with a bear.
Lost Bear?
Yes, the Lost Bear Tavern.
Yeah.
And that place was pretty cool. We loved, like, the...
I like the
ambiance. Yeah, the atmosphere.
The atmosphere and the way it was decorated, the way it looked was really nice. They had lots of drinks on tap and just... You know, it's a really cool place, but the food was a little strange. Like,
yeah, a little weird.
I think it may have been geared towards college students or something, because it was all, like, I don't know, even weirder than Pub Grub, which I think I would have expected Pub Grub there. But instead they had, like, you know, nachos and then seafood and then burritos and just, like, all these things that didn't really seem to go together.
Yes, but beyond just that, like, everything was, like... weird variations on the burrito and weird variations on the nachos. It wasn't like normal food. But so if you're wanting to try something unique and interesting, definitely a place to check out. And they do have, they're very big about local. So they had a huge selection of local beers. They had a sampling of local meads even. And I think they try to source all of their food locally as well. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, not to say the food was bad either. I enjoyed what I had. It was a little strange when I got there and the food was completely not what I would have expected from a place like that. So it took me a little bit to finally decide on something just because I was thrown off a little bit.
But it was okay. We just sat there and drank our drinks and enjoyed the atmosphere and... Yeah, so it was a good little date night.
Yeah, and I definitely have to check out more of Portland sometime. I think Old Orchard Beach spoiled us a little bit since we were within walking distance of the beach and very close to some grocery stores and stuff that it made it so we didn't really get out quite as much because it was nice to just, you know, walk down to the beach and walk along and go home and cook or grab something at the grocery store real quick and not really have to go anywhere too crazy, so... It was good, but it also kind of spoiled us and made us not check out Portland as much as maybe we would have.
Yeah, but definitely a proponent of Old Orchard Beach now. And our RV park there, Paradise Resorts, it was amazing. You know, they had like a heated swimming pool and I think a normal swimming pool. And they had a little playground and a little like tennis courts. And then they also have like a little snack shack. So, you know, even that made it. I don't think we took advantage of that actually while we were there. But
it had already closed for the season.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh,
okay. I guess that's why we didn't do that. But so that even, you know, could make it even easier to just kind of hang out and relax in your area if that's what you're looking for. But they also had events. They had a big pavilion. So they had a lobster bake one day that celebrated the Old Orchard annual car show, kind of going hand in hand with that. So that was kind of cool. We got to see a lot of the old cars that came in and came on, parked all over the streets, and they closed one street down. So it was just kind of a cool little town to check out and visit.
And one cool thing at our RV park too that I haven't seen anywhere else is that we're far northeast enough now to where we're starting to see signs in both English and French, because I guess there's so many French Canadians come down through here and stop in Portland maybe on their way down and to the U.S. on their RV trips. So I just thought that was cool. Never really been anywhere where you had to have signs in French and English since, you know, spent most of the time in the South.
Yeah, and I noticed that the people that work at the park all spoke English and French fluently as well. So that was pretty neat. But yeah, now we're hanging out in Bass Harbor, Maine. So we went a little bit farther north, not too far. I think it took us about 3.5-4 hours to get here. We're inside of Acadia. Is it a state park or national park?
National park.
Acadia National Park. So really excited to get the opportunity to check it out. When we first got here yesterday, we got set up and then we immediately headed out the door. We went and got a picnic and took it to the seawall. So it's kind of like this natural area where there's just a lot of rocks and it kind of acts as this natural buffer against the ocean. And there's a lot of good places to just kind of sit and watch the waves. And there's also like little areas where the water kind of coming in with the tides and then going back out will leave a lot of little tide pools. So you get to see, you know, some marine life and, you know, barnacles and snails and things like that. And I think there's some areas that we're going to try to check out later this week where you can even see a little bit of coral and anemones when the tide goes out. So we're going to check those things out too. And then we tried to check out the lighthouse yesterday, but for future reference, if you ever come here and want to go to the Bass Harbor Lighthouse, park farther down and just walk in because the parking there is crazy. Like you'll sit in line waiting for people to come out so you can park. And then today we started checking out some of the many hiking trails in the area. So we went to the Gorham Mountain, and if there are any Firefly fans out there, you'll know why I picked that trail. But it was a lot of fun. It was a pretty steep climb up a mountain, and the views were just breathtaking. I could have stayed there for hours just looking at everything. It was so beautiful and it was so worth it. It's a very short walk. I got Zach up this morning and he's like, I'm pretty sore from what we've been doing the last few days. And I was like, well, I just picked out a very short, easy hike for us. And then we get there and it's not easy.
Yeah, short hike up a mountain.
Yeah, so there's a lot of boulders. So wear good shoes with some ankle support if you ever get out here to check it out. But it was definitely worth it. And I was telling Zach, if the leaves start changing more during the 2 weeks that we're here, I'll probably want to go back so we can get some good fall foliage shots. But anyway, we will hopefully have a lot of adventures to share with you guys over the next 2 weeks. We love it here, and we're so excited to have this opportunity. Maine's been on my list for a long time, so I want to check out everything and see everything and do everything, but we'll see. So for this episode, we interviewed Khaki Burgess, and she was a chief stewardess on yachts for many years. And in fact, while she was doing that job, she actually met her husband. So it's been a big part of her life, and she's coming out with a podcast called Yachty Talk, and she already has a Facebook up for it, so you can check it out and, you know, get updates and see when it comes live. But for any reality TV show fans out there, Bravo has a reality show about life on yachts, and so the idea for her podcast is she's going to talk from her experience and talk a little bit more about the real life experiences, because the show kind of compacts everything down and compresses everything and rushes things, and then of course, you know, there are going to be some scripted moments, so she'll kind of compare and contrast the two. But she has a lot of really cool stories and experiences to share with us. And one thing that we were noticing, too, is that she's so nonchalant and just casual about her storytelling. She's so fun to talk to and energetic, but at the same time, it can be easy to miss some of the juicy bits of what she shares, just because it's just, you know, that's just how life is. So definitely pay close attention and don't miss anything.
All right, so let's go into our interview with Khaki Burgess.
Okay, so thank you, Khaki, for joining us today. We're super excited to talk with you since we met in that Facebook group, hearing all the stuff that you've been working on, you know, being a chief stewardess on yachts and building your own boat and traveling the world and all these things that you're interested in. We're so excited to learn more about those. But before we dive in, I thought it'd be cool to start off with just a little bit of background on you, maybe some of your interests and hobbies, and then we'll dive into some questions.
Sure. Well, my hobbies are rescuing animals, and much to my husband's dismay, we live in a condo, so it's usually not totally cool. But having lived on boats for 13 years, my husband and I were actually big animal lovers, and we actually had guinea pigs on board. And two led to four, as guinea pigs do. And then we also had an African gray parrot on board. And James Taylor tried to teach our bird how to yodel, which was quite cool.
Oh, that's amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, and we've been on land for about 3 years. And I'm originally from a farm in Arkansas. And so people are like, how on earth did you get into yachting? But, you know, fast forward, you know, college, university, and then in the mid-90s, I sort of took a break and thought, I'll go work on yachts. And so I paid for a $900 course. It was a week, and put my resume out there. I walked the docks and got a job, and we went to the Bahamas. I was a second stew on like a 105-foot boat, and my first charter guest was John McAfee. So if you ever, you know, boot up your computer and you have McAfee antivirus, yes, he went crazy.
Yeah, and he ran for president.
Yeah, He was not crazy when I knew him, so there's some good stories there, but all positive. And so I did that for a season, and a season in yachting is, it's not 6 weeks like the show Below Deck shows. It's more like a season would run October, November through after Easter is sort of how you can look at it. That would be the winter season, and then the summer season sort of picks back up around, you know, like May, and then it'll run to October. And but after that, then I moved to Chicago. I was in corporate America, and after September 11th, you know, like so many people, I just reevaluated life and decided to take a break. And I went back to yachting. And then I did that for 13 years. And I met my husband. And that's how a girl from a farm in Arkansas got to travel the world on private yachts.
It's almost too bad that John McAfee wasn't crazy yet, or we'd have like much better stories to ask you.
I know, I know. The only for those that watch Below Deck, they may be familiar with Onion Gate, which is the chef. The primary, they give you preference sheets, so they literally tell you what they like, what they don't like, and their allergies, and it's quite serious. And the chef on Below Deck, Med, put in onions in the primaries food even after he requested it not to happen. And when you're dealing with people's lives, you don't want to do that. Well, Mr. McAfee was a recovering alcoholic, and he specified that he did not want anything cooked with any sort of alcohol, even if it gets burned off. And the chef did prepare a dessert with alcohol, thinking it would have burned off, and he literally spit it out at the table. Yeah. But that's his right. Absolutely. So, but that was about the craziest thing that happened. He was lovely. He had family on board, his wife at the time. So, sorry, not much gossip.
So going back to, you know, you said in the 90s after college, you kind of just thought about going back or going onto the yacht and applying. What was your thought process? How did you pick working on yachts from being a girl from Arkansas?
Great question. My parents lived in South Florida, and they knew of the yachting industry and had been lucky enough to have been aboard private yachts. And my mom said to me, she said, all the girls, meaning the stewardesses, all the girls are Australian, Kiwis, English. They're educated. They're outgoing. And she said, you know, you might want to try that. And so I did. So I researched how to get into it. And this really before the internet. Port Lauderdale was the hub. I spoke with some people who recommended taking a course. And this is, there are tons of courses now, but back then there was only one at the American Yacht Institute. It was 1 week. And back then, I think it was either $600 or $900. And that's in 94, 93. That's a lot of money. And so I took that course. And then they also propel you how to put your CV or your resume out there. And there are specific crew agencies for yachting, just how if you were in corporate America, you would use a headhunter. It's the same thing. And so I submitted my resume. I had always waitressed and I'd worked retail. And so from that hospitality side, the waitressing and bartending, that was an attribute. Not my college education, unfortunately, much to the dismay of my parents.
That's really cool that, you know, they train you how to do it, and then, you know, they work through the course, and then they also help you prepare the CV and your resume to submit, because I feel like a lot of training programs don't have that. They teach you what to do and how to do it, but then they kind of leave you on your own. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was great. And I actually reached out to an instructor the other day. I actually still have my course book from back then. So, and it has changed. I will say that it obviously has changed since, you know, the mid-90s. Now a lot of it's done online, which in our industry is, in a lot of industries, that's a shame, because so much of your personality is part of the job. You're interacting with multi-millionaires, and in my case, a lot of billionaires. And so what you see on paper does not necessarily translate. It's like hiring an actor just from, you know, a resume. It's not quite the same. If you do a reading, then you see sort of the personality come out.
A good point. So what was you kind of your job or role as second stewardess or chief stewardess? What were kind of some of your duties and responsibilities with that?
Okay, so I start out, most will start out as a third stewardess. The boats, in the mid-90s, the boats were, you know, 100, 125 foot. That was the norm. The norm now are 200-foot boats. So a lot would start out as a third stewardess. And that involves ironing. It involves laundry. Ironing, a lot of laundry, cleaning. You know, you may not see outside. I mean, you can look through a porthole, but that's about it. It's not glamorous work. I mean, it is, you start out cleaning toilets. And then from there, I recommend 2 years as a second stew. Most these days seem to be wanting to jump right down into chief stew, but it's just like in any business, you don't start out as the CEO or even the vice president. You do start out as usually an intern. And so then as chief stewardess, you oversee all of those duties, but you become almost... when guests are on board, you become the concierge. You become sometimes the babysitter. A lot of times I would feed the kids separately while the parents might be getting ready for dinner downstairs in their staterooms. And they'd send the kids up and we'd sit them at the bar and feed them. You know, I usually could get them to eat the green beans because I'd promise them like they could pet the guinea pigs or something. So parents really like that. You're the bartender. You're the hostess, you're the primary server. If the primary, meaning let's just say Mr. and Mrs. are chartering the vessel. If the primaries were awake, I was awake. That's just how I did it. They sort of expected that. I was also married to the captain. And so it would help with itineraries. Let's say one day we're in St. Martin, and a shout out to everybody in the Caribbean right now that has faced Irma. A lot of our friends have been affected down there. But let's say we're in St. Martin and we're scheduled to go to St. Bart's, and then they want to go to Anguilla. So they might talk to me about it as opposed to always calling the captain out, and it made it real simpatico. But yeah, chief stewardess, you organize all the provisions, meaning the food, the alcohol before a trip. Daily you're, you know, restocking and reevaluating, thinking about how much more, you know, Grey Goose you might need, because you're out in the middle of the ocean. There's not running, you know, you don't get to run to a Target or a liquor store and just pick things up. You have to prepare.
Right. So you were able to bring your pets on board with you?
Well, not really. I did have to give up my two, and this is one of my questions that let's say I'm getting my hair done and the hairdresser says, oh, I'd love to do that. How can I get into yachting? And I'm like, are you prepared to give up your apartment? Are you prepared to give up your pets? And are you prepared to give up every holiday with family? Usually they start answering no to those. but I did. I gave up my two precious cats because it was a life choice. And that's what I decided to do. I wasn't married. I didn't have children. But then the owner that we worked for, the Mr. and Mrs., they loved animals. And so they were okay with it. And they had an African gray parrot. My husband, Phil, was really taken by it. And so our owner said, why don't you get a parrot? You can keep him in the Sky Lounge, which is basically like the living room, and ask the guest, because we chartered the boat out, meaning Mr. and Mrs. rented the boat out. And this is normal. Ask a charter guest if they're okay with it. And if not, just put him in your cabin. And so sometimes we'd have four guinea pigs and an African gray parrot in our tiny little cabin where it's so small, I can't get out of my side of the bed is up against the side of the boat. So you know how most people, you can get out on either side of your bed. Well, not in the case for us.
So when somebody owns a yacht like this and charters it out, is it almost like a business for them where they're making money, or are they basically just trying to recoup some of the cost of owning the boat?
Definitely the latter. The saying goes, the happiest day of a boat owner's life is the day that he buys the boat and the day that he sells the boat. You know, let's say there's a 150-foot boat, like a 50-meter. I mean, it costs about $1 million a year to run. So you don't recoup that. But yes, it does put some money back into the coffers. And it's actually really good for the vessel to be used. I mean, this is like, think of it as a vacation home. You're usually not at most people aren't at their vacation homes year-round or 3 months at a time. So what does it do in between that? And so for the boat, physically, for a maintenance standpoint, it's just like you don't let your car sit, is running the boat is good for it. And also for the crew. The crew, we like to stay busy. And so that keeps us busy as well.
So you mentioned a bunch of Caribbean islands. Is that where you spent most of your time?
So I talked earlier about the seasons and how that works. Just to back up, when we're hired, as opposed to, let's say, like below deck, we're hired for a year. That's the commitment that you really offer to the captain and to the vessel. But for seasons, the Caribbean is in the winter, and then usually the Med or the East Coast of the U.S. are for the summer seasons. So we would spend for 13 years, every winter in the Caribbean. And that's Caribbean meaning from, you know, the BVIs, British Virgin Islands, could be all the way down to Barbados into the St. Lucia area.
So what were some of your favorite places to be?
Well, that's like asking me which one is my favorite pet. I absolutely love to travel. So my husband and I get asked this question all the time. It is very difficult to answer because I find joy and love and amazing scenery, but more so usually amazing people at different places. I love the BVIs. It's Robert Louis Stevenson, so you can just think about Treasure Island. And so for the Caribbean, I also love St. Lucia. I think I picked the places that are sort of untouched. You don't, in the BVIs or in parts of the Caribbean, you don't see hotels or resorts piping the skyline. It's trees and beautiful scenery. But we were also spent a lot of time in the Mediterranean, and they kind of call, in yachting, we call that the milk run. So it's like, you know, Saint-Tropez, you know, Italy, and, you know, back and forth. And it sounds so trite, but we're only usually getting to see Capri from the boat, or that off chance that you get to go ashore and provision, which I always tried to do. and then we were lucky enough to spend about a year and a half in Asia. And that was an amazing experience. And so amazing beauty there.
So you weren't typically going ashore. And when you did, it was for shopping and restocking, things like that.
Exactly. If you have guests on board there, we did a charter in Asia, in Indonesia, and the girls and I, and that's just, I could have hired a guy, I just never hired a steward. So when I say girls, that's just what our team was. The four of us did not walk on land for 45 days. The boat was in Singapore. Singapore to Bali was 5 days underway, steaming on the boat. We picked up guests the next day. We did not go ashore. Then the charter was a 28-day charter in the middle of Indonesia. There were many islands that we saw that had not had outside visitors ever, had not seen, you know, a Westerner. They just until 30 years ago still had bones through their noses. It was incredible. So the 28-day charter, they extended to 31, and then we drop off back in Bali, and then we dropped off in Papua New Guinea, and then from there, we cruised back to Singapore, and that ended up being 45 days. We did get ashore for 1 hour in Komodo to go see the Komodo dragons.
Wow.
Yeah.
So from all your time working as a stewardess, do you have any stories that stick out as maybe your best experience or a nightmare experience?
How much time do we have? No, geez. People always ask, so who were your most famous charter guest? And we didn't really have, let's quote unquote, they mean celebrities is really what they mean. We didn't really have a lot of celebrities. Thank goodness. We seem to always attract the 1%ers, you know, but the wealthy families, and they would come on with their children. And we also had a lot of repeat charter guests, but now some of my guests from the past are quite famous. So we had JP DeJoria. He owns Patron Tequila and Paul Mitchell products. And he and his wife were regulars. They chartered us our boat quite frequently. Dorinda Medley, she is now a Real Housewife of New York. Well, she wasn't famous at the time, but now she is. So we like to say we had good karma on the boat. And crazy charter guests. Sometimes you get a preference sheet and you just don't want anybody from California because you just know it's going to be gluten-free, fat-free, sugar-free. There's not a lot of experimentation on the food. So the chefs really dreaded that. And I just, if they ever ask for a mojito, I just the first day go, oh, I'm so sorry, we don't have any mint. If I start making mojitos on the first day of a 10-day charter, you're out in the middle, like I said, of nowhere. You can't get fresh mint. So a lot of times I would just do it. I would do a cocktail of the day, and I would make it with whatever I had. Some of my worst experiences, I mean, we had these crazy guests, not American, not European, and they really wanted this artichoke liqueur. I don't even remember the name of it. Well, we were in France, it's Italian, or vice versa, and we couldn't find it. I mean, Saint-Tropez, we called provisioners, meaning somebody that would source it for us. They couldn't get it. He was so obsessed with it, we had to hire a helicopter. I had to get on the helicopter. I had to go to Italy. I had to buy the artichoke liqueur, fly back to Saint-Tropez, and then he drank so much, unfortunately, it did not stay in his system, and it was all over my carpets and in the Sky Lounge. So, yeah, but lots of stories like that, but I try not to dwell on those.
Yeah, and it sounds like nothing too horrible anyway, just, you know, some drunken shenanigans by the guest.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some. I'm not trying to be Pollyanna about it, but I don't want to bring a negative light to it. I mean, anybody in any situation, work situation, has had instances that, you know, wow, you know, you can get really taken aback. I did have an owner. I did not stay on this boat very long. I did have an owner grab me so hard by the arm to pull me into her. She grabbed me in the galley, the kitchen. It left marks on my arm because her knuckle-to-knuckle diamond ring, she had it soaking in a black coffee cup, and I was afraid somebody was going, or it was going to spill over. We were in St. Bart's. The boat was rocky. So I took it out, finished cleaning it with a toothbrush, folded a flannel, a washcloth, and put the diamond ring there. And she couldn't find it, even though it was still sitting in the same spot. She grabbed me from the galley, pulled me into her stateroom, and the whole time was shouting, where is my ring? Have you flushed it down the toilet? And I'm thinking to myself, we buy special toilet paper for our systems on the yacht. You think that I'm going to flush, you know, something down a toilet? But, you know, so there's things like that, but I try not to think about it. I like the funny stories or the good times.
Yeah, so it sounds like overall you really just enjoyed your experience and just want to keep looking back on it fondly. That's great.
Absolutely. I loved it. And I took my job very seriously. It wasn't just about the travel. I mean, that was definitely a perk, but I was in service. These people, this is their holiday. If you could imagine going to a top resort and having butlers and housekeepers, but on a different level, I'm standing in their personal space, behind the bar, I'm listening to their most intimate conversations. We become part of their holiday. And there's something really special about that.
So if I can ask this, how did you meet your husband? Was it on a yachting trip? Or?
Yes, absolutely. That's the good gossip. Yes, I met my husband. He was the incoming captain. I had already been on several boats by then. I'd worked my way up from second stew to chief stew. And I was actually dating someone else, and so was he. And there were three of us that were new to this vessel. And we all became really good friends because the crew that was already there were friends with the owner's son. They were ensconced together. And so they were quite a tight-knit group. So the captain, the deckhand, who was female, was my cabin mate. And myself, the three of us became really good friends. And, you know, he saw me at 3 o'clock in the morning dealing with drunk charter guests. And he saw me dealing with having to get not their wives on board in their Jimmy Choos and wearing their Jimmy Choos all over the deck and, you know, putting dents in it and no makeup and handling stress. And I saw how he worked. And so once it sort of became something, I did leave the boat. But then the owners asked me to come back because I just didn't want it to be a, you know, awkward situation. But it's just like any, right. I go back to actors. If the actors are on a set, you're together 24 hours a day. You can see how relationships can evolve.
Yeah, that's really true. And that's really cool. I always like hearing people's origin stories, how they became a couple.
Yeah, I just told it last night, actually.
So you said that sometimes people ask you about how to get into the business or how they can become, you know, a stewardess or start working on a yacht. Is there a good age range for that or kind of like an age limit where, you know, if I don't know how the hiring process works?
No, that's a great question. I don't want to say, and this is not for HR purposes or, you know, legal purposes. I'm not going to say that there's an age limit. It's definitely a younger people's game. It is so physically demanding. Really, you're on your feet 18 hours a day. And it's not just, you know, standing around making lattes. It's up and down tiny little stairs, getting into, you know, cleaning. Breakfast can become a dinner party. We have, you know, three plates. We have a bowl. You have 2 to 3 glasses, or, you know, you'll have a coffee cup, then you have an orange juice, then you have a water. You have the cutlery that mirrors all of your different courses, and then all of the platters. So just think about, there's not just this magic fairy that washes all of this. You know, the boat we worked on for 7 years, we didn't even have a dishwasher until the chef and I refitted the galley and put one in. We literally hand washed everything. That's 10 guests and 8 crew.
Wow.
So it's physically demanding. So 20s is when you need to get into the game. It would be very, very difficult to get into the game, you know, at 35. But you can stay in it. Once you're in it, then you work your way up. And so, yes, a lot of, you know, chief stews are, you know, 30. Because they started when they were 22.
You mentioned 7 years. So did you work with your husband on a boat for 7 years? Is that you lived?
We worked together on boats for 13 years, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we did not throw each other overboard. We worked for one particular owner, family, for 7 years together. On the same boat. And that boat actually was the one that was featured in The Wolf of Wall Street. Just to give you a visual.
Oh, wow. So when Sarah was telling me about you, she said that you actually had experience building a boat too. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So there's boat builders in the U.S. And then the Rolls-Royce and the Bentleys of yacht building are in Germany and Holland. And we were lucky enough to get a job finishing the build and outfitting the yacht in Holland. So we lived at Schiphol Airport for a while, and then we lived on a tiny little island. I never pronounce it right, so anybody Dutch listening, it's called Kog, and which is right outside of Amsterdam. And it was an amazing experience. So I bought most everything in the States, besides electronics, since it was different voltage, and then shipped it over. Literally shipped a ton of interior, you know, fabrics and supplies and provisions. And then we took that boat straight to the Monaco Boat Show. And then from there, we brought her to Florida, did the Florida Boat Show. And then that's when we took that boat to Asia. We were based out of Hong Kong and Singapore. And but spent quite a bit of time in China, Indonesia, Malaysia. Oh, sorry about that. Indonesia, okay. All over Southeast
Asia.
Sounds
like our dog.
Yeah, sorry about that, everybody.
It's all right. One of our last episodes, our dog ran around on hardwood floors the entire time. So you heard click, clack, click, clack. And then he also decided to play with his squeakiest toy, like, right while we're talking. So I think anybody who's listening is used to it.
I know, you know, and before I try to do podcast, I cannot shut the door. They just will not allow that. I give them cat food. And usually I can, it's like children. They usually can be occupied for a little bit. But, yeah, they notice something that's going on with the weather as well here in South Florida. We have Irma coming. So.
Yeah. So when you say you built a boat, can you describe what it looked like a little bit? Just since, you know, I'm not really a boat person, so I'm not
sure
what to imagine.
Well, this is it was a 50 meter, so I don't know, I have 160 feet, and the superstructure, meaning the bones of the boat, all of that had already been done by the time we got there. There's really not anything for crew to do. That's what the shipyards are there for. So all of the boat, and the doors and the cabinetry was sort of still being done, but the full structure was already there. And then our job was to come in, and so they have an interior decorator, but then you have naval architects and engineers, and it's buzzing. It's amazing to see a boat that it's up on, so it's out of the water, and the boat doesn't go into the water until it's completely finished and it's ready for testing. And that was an amazing experience to watch this, you know, massive boat coming out of a garage, the biggest garage you've ever seen, and and splashing. They call it splashing for the first time. So going into the water and then going down the and hauling the waterways there, and they open the locks for the boat, and it's a very cool process.
Yeah, I bet it was pretty neat being like the first group of people on the boat too.
Yes, and we got to make it our own, which was really neat. For the girls in the interior, most of the time you walk on and you're subject to what either the interior decorator has purchased or the prior chief stewardess has purchased. This was, I got to do it sort of myself. So things that I liked, placemats and napkins and martini shakers, things that I use literally almost 24 hours a day, I was able to purchase. And that was a neat process.
Yeah, that sounds like so much fun. I love decorating and buying things to make things cozy and homey. So,
that sounds and just really imagine fun. You get to do it with someone else's money.
That's the best part.
Absolutely.
So I think you mentioned earlier that you've got some really great tips for people for traveling. So if there's anyone who's listening to this and they're like, oh my gosh, this is so me, I want to go live on the ocean, what would be some guidance or advice for those people?
Well, they could definitely reach out to me, via Facebook or social media. And that's at Yachty Talk. I think we'll talk about that later. But I would just recommend, if they're really serious about it, to start researching it. But if you type in working on a private yacht, you're going to get, fishing vessels, you're going to get small boats, you're going to get probably not exactly what they're looking for. So I'd recommend reaching out to me, and then I'll throw some stuff up on my website. I'm actually kind of working on that so people will have resources.
Oh, awesome.
And then my tips for traveling. So literally I could be in a different country in 3 hours, and I might have to shop in France. Then I might have to shop in Italy or just travel if we have a weekend off. And our weekends might be a Tuesday, Wednesday, not necessarily a Friday, Saturday. So before I went to Asia, I immersed myself in reading like Amy Tan. So find an author, or even if you're just going to travel to to France and you're going to go on a week's vacation, maybe pick up a few Peter Mayle books. And what that does is it starts your ear and your mind in, because whenever they're writing, they do write about, they'll write about streets, they'll write about going to the market or directions. And so they use the actual words or the street signs. And so it sort of trains your brain and gets you in that mindset of, oh, you know, vive la France. Or then Amy Tan speaking, because obviously Mandarin is completely foreign to me. And so I sort of got a feel for the culture. So that's one tip. And so my second tip is, let's just use France as an example. When you get to France, pick something. I use a salad niçoise. So let's say I'm at my first restaurant. I see what the euros for the salad niçoise is. Then I will get my phone out. Then I'll convert and find out, okay, it's 20 euros. What is it in US dollars? Then I use that as a gauge. I'll pick something I'll do increments. So I'll do like 5 euros, 20 euros, and then if you're shopping, maybe do 50 euros. Have those three numbers in your head, and you won't always have to pull out your phone to convert euros to dollars. You can just say quickly, okay, so 20 euros, it's, let's just say $18. And you know that. And then you can also use that little tool as a gauge of how expensive a restaurant is going to be. So once again, I use a salad niçoise, and then I might pick my favorite rosé Whispering Angel. So let's say the salad niçoise is 20 euros and the Whispering Angel is 45 euro. If it's below that or way above that, then I'm thinking, ooh, that's an expensive restaurant. Or no, that's a 18 euro salad. I don't know. It's just my own little trick, but you know, you want to enjoy the moment, and people are always on their phones, and there's really no reason to always have to convert everything or have it written down. Just have some three numbers, and then you can go to any market and shop, you know, freely, where you're just enjoying the moment.
Yeah, I like that. And I've never done that to compare the, you know, how expensive each restaurant or shop is, but I always try to, you know, have a rough estimation in my head about how much, you know, dollars to pesos or yen or whatever. And that way I don't have to, you know, pull out a calculator each time. And I like to even make myself think I'm spending a little more money than I am. That way, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised later when, you know, my math was a little bit off in my favor. But.
Yes, exactly. And another thing, use the ATMs in the country that you're going to. You'll get the best rate. You know, we always have a little bit of currency, but don't go, you know, hog wild to the bank and get, you know, you'll get the best rate at ATMs. My third tip, or now that I guess will be my fourth tip, is learn hello and thank you in every language possible. Whether you're shopping at a grocery store and, for instance, down here, I'll hear an accent and I can tell that they're probably from Haiti. And so I'll just say merci. And they're so yeah. Shocked. But it's just the little things. You know, you want the experience to be full circle. And so just saying hello. And don't let people tell you Parisians are rude. They're not. It's what you make of it. If you try, and please don't order your dressing on the side when you're in France, you know, it's like, woohoo, American alert. enjoy it, be a part of the culture. And so just a simple hello and definitely thank you in the language where, you know, wherever you're going.
So this no ordering dressing on the side, do you have resources that you've used to find out things about each culture that, you know, people from America shouldn't do to not be rude? Or is it just kind of a learn as you go kind of experience?
Well, I was usually the token American on private yachts. There are not a lot of Americans on foreign flag yachts, meaning that go worldwide. That's a whole nother conversation. But so I worked with, my husband's British. I worked with Germans, Australians, Kiwis, New Zealanders, English, South Africans, Jamaicans. I mean, you name it. I've worked with every culture. And so that's how you learn. I mean, one of my first boats, that I can't even say it the not the right way, but Caribbean. It's Caribbean. It's not Caribbean. Caribbean. And I have to trick my head. I have to say, okay, it's like the Carib Indians, which is where it's from.
Oh, interesting.
Or Carib chocolate. So think of that and then how you say things. I grew up on a farm, like I mentioned before, and we use CBs. And so there's CB talk. And so I would say 10-4, and the captain would come back on the radio, because that's we all carry radios. That's how you communicate. He'd come back and he'd go, Khaki, this is not, you know, a truck stop. Please do not use CB talk. But I also worked in restaurants. So I say like, oh, we got an 86, the mint. So I just kind of use those shortcuts. So you learn as you go. Americans, I mean, we do tend to be loud. And we also wear really, really bright colors when we travel. The Caribbean, that's fine, but if you go to London, you know, just stick with black.
You know, I've found that you can ask people from other cultures, you know, if you get to know them a little bit, maybe just the dumbest questions and they don't mind. Like a lot of my coworkers are from Argentina and I just ask them the dumbest things and they give me answers. So, you know, I eventually learn and, you know, more about their culture and can, you know, set that to memory and not have to ask those dumb questions or make those mistakes anymore.
Well, it makes you humble, and that's yeah. All people really want is for people to be real.
So I think we've mentioned a couple times here the Bravo show Below Deck, and then you also mentioned your Facebook page or group, Yachty Talk. So would you tell us a little bit more about the Below Deck show and, you know, kind of your involvement and role in that?
Sure. I don't have any involvement in it except that I'm reality TV obsessed. So I think I would probably watch it even if I had not worked on private yachts. And this is a real catch 22, which is sort of why I'm starting Yachty Talk. I ran into Captain Lee and Stewardess Amy. They were on, well, Captain Lee is currently on the Below Deck new season, and Amy was a second stewardess on last year, the year before, on Below Deck. So it's by Bravo. It's a reality show about working on private yachts, and then they have charter guests. A lot of folks in our industry, meaning the yachting industry, especially the old school ones, which I have to put my husband and I in that category, really, really hesitant to embrace a reality show about our industry because it is so small. It's always been known to be very, very private. You know, you don't discuss who owns the boat that you work on. You don't discuss your charter guest. It's just very private. And so it's taken some time, but I think everybody's warming up to it. And I think it's hysterical. A lot what happens on the show happens, you know, in real life. It usually doesn't happen in 48 hours. So their timing, because it is, you know, for TV, may not be, we might have, you know, there might be a drunken, you know, escapade with the yacht crew. It doesn't happen every single night of what the show says. So I love it and I watch it for entertainment purposes. But it is different in the real world, the real life of yachting. So that's why I'm starting Yachty Talk. I just want to bring positivity to it. I don't want to talk about this crew member and mention their name and say, oh, I would never do that. I'd like to just bring awareness to, okay, so customarily a chief stew wouldn't do that. Or a charter guest, you wouldn't interact that way with a charter guest, you know. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think a lot of people are hungry for positive material, too, because there's so much negative out there. It's refreshing to find somebody who wants to talk in positive terms. So.
Thank you. Yes, I concur.
Yeah. So tell us a little more about your personal project you said you're starting, and you know, when is that coming out? And
yeah, you know. So I'm looking at the end of September to launch my podcast. I'm working on interviews right now. But I've set up a Facebook page, Yachty Talk, and then I also have a private group, Yachty Talk private group, where there won't be other yachties on there. But I'm a part of these different Facebook groups and that watch reality TV. And so I would notice after Below Deck or Below Deck Mediterranean would air, people would discuss it, and then they might come up with something really obscure, like, oh, that's not the, those are actors. Well, they're not. Yes, they do hire people for the entertainment value, but they're not per se, like actors that are getting paid to act. There's not a separate crew that is doing all the fairy work, you know, behind the scenes. That is the actual crew that's doing it. You may just not see the first mate or the engineer. Using my knowledge, I just would pipe in, and plus being a reality TV addict, I could chime in because I would see where they were going, and then people would just start asking lots of different questions, and I thought, you know what, let's not clog this Facebook page, let's take this, you know, offline, and create sort of just a space about yachting and yachty talk. And many times during this interview, I say, like, for instance, galley. And so then I would quickly say, that's our kitchen. It's a whole nomenclature of its own that you learn. And it's a small cottage industry, so there's not a lot of books out there. A couple of chief stewardesses have written some books, and I'll have them up on my website when I get that going as well.
And we'll have all those links that you mentioned, like to your projects and whatever else, on our show notes page too.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on. We really enjoyed it. And, you know, just when I first saw your little Facebook comment, I was super curious about everything that you were involved in and doing. So this has been really fun and interesting for me.
Thank you so much for reaching out and having me, and safe travels to everyone, and cheers, which means thank you.
Yeah, and safe travels to you too. And good luck with the approaching storm. We'll be thinking about you.
All right, so I hope everybody enjoyed that interview with Khaki Burgess and learned a thing or two about, you know, what it's like to live and work on these big yachts. So be sure to check her out on Facebook at Yachty Talk, and she'll have the Yachty Talk podcast coming out, I think, very soon, so look out for that. And for those of you who aren't the best at spelling, like myself, I took the liberty of looking it up, how to spell Yachty, because I had no idea. It's Yachtie. Is that right, Sarah?
Yes.
So that's how you spell Yachty, Yachty Talk podcast, and look on Facebook for Yachty Talk. And while you're at it, be sure to give us a like, give us a follow on Facebook and Twitter. On there, you can search for Thinking Liberty, or we're ListenTL is both of our usernames or handles or whatever you would say for Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, and if you have any questions for us, things that you would have liked us to have covered on this episode, or ideas for future episodes, definitely reach out and let us know. We're always willing and able to listen to you guys, and always happy to do so. And if you have any questions for Khaki in particular, definitely reach out and put them on her page. She's always looking for more discussion to happen there. And I think she mentioned on the show too that if you're interested in learning more about how to get a job working on a yacht, and you want to get into that lifestyle or career path, reach out to her and let her know, and she'll be happy to give you some pointers and help you get started there.
And I guess that's it for this episode. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Thinking Liberty. Subscribe to the show for free on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher at thinkingliberty.com. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, articles by Zach and Sarah, and more. We'll see you next time.